Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com. Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
So both of us are still in New York. We are recording this. It is 12:54 in the p.m., approximately 3.5 hours before first ball for Dominic Thiem and Sasha Zverev.
Oh.
In the men's final of the United States Open.
I have a puck.
No, Ruben is. You have a puck drop.
I have a puck drop. Yeah.
Are you? Yeah.
Yeah. With Maxwell Eichler.
Yeah, your friend. That's what you're going to do today.
Yes.
You're not going to watch the men's final. You're going to watch the
Islanders. The furthest.
Is that a final?
Eastern
Conference final.
Conference final. This is the furthest we've gone since '93. Mm. I was just a glisten in my parents' eye. Okay.
You felt a little awkward saying that, didn't you?
It wasn't great. It wasn't great.
Let's start by decompressing here. When we spoke, you were still in the midst of your doubles match with Chapo and Bopana.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last time we spoke. You guys lost.
Mm-hmm.
You and Ernesto Escobedo. You then immediately bumped elbows and left. Like, it was just like, Noah Rubin is gone.
See ya.
Actually
got picked up that night at 11:30.
Okay. How are you doing? What's it been like the last week in terms of recovery and also just kind of your mindset now looking back at the U.S. Open?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, speaking to Dr. Katz and him helping me out and me trying to be as honest as possible, you know, I think I was prepared for the worst of what was in my head, and then more things took place and I wasn't ready for it. And it really did. It hindered my motivation. It hindered everything, my mentality. You saw it. I was super negative after a while, but I just didn't, I underestimated how poorly it was going to be performed. But I've, you know, at this point I've kind of come to terms. I mean, here we are, we have French, which could possibly be my last tournament of the year. You know, there are rumors spreading that they're, could hopefully be other tournaments entering our realm, because I can't hear other people saying, hey, there's a couple in Germany if you want to go back over there. And I'm like, no. So, you know, I've come to terms with it. I feel pretty good right now. You know, the French takes me basically into October at that point, which honestly is not that far away from the end of season. I'm excited to have the chance to play singles for the first time since March. I'm hitting the ball well. I feel good. It's, you know, the only thing which I've come to terms with, and that's why I'm working so hard in some of the other ventures that I have, is tennis must go on in one aspect that, you know, we put it over health. We've seen that before. But also, you know, if there can be a tournament played anywhere in the world, they're going to make it happen. And, you know, at first I thought it was okay, you know, to have tennis continuing, and but, you know, you're taking away this opportunity for other players to compete. You know, it's very difficult to say, hey, there's tournaments in Uzbekistan and Germany, but if you can't get there, you're not going to be playing for the rest of the year. So I had to get over that. That was the hardest part to get over for me. But I'm in a pretty good place right now. You know, I can't rely on any tournaments to pop up in the U.S. And if it comes, it's just icing on the cake. But it's given me a lot of good time to kind of work through some of the stuff that I have been. And even though I thought I was prepared for everything, new things came my way.
I would disagree with you in some way, shapes, or form here. Since you left, I've had my time to reflect here on the U.S. Open, and I would say it wasn't perfect. I mean, nothing at this point is going to be perfect in terms of making everything run as we expect it to work. I feel that they did the best job that they possibly could. I think the USTA did the best job they possibly could to put on an event that was pretty safe. I think the players got an opportunity. I know that you and I would have liked to have qualifiers. I understand why they didn't do it. I know that the pair 11, I know that that was, I think my bigger issue now in reflection is that what happened to Guido and Hugo the week before in terms of just that situation. I have a lot of respect, having seen over the last week and a half the hard work that the USTA actually did put into trying to do the very best that they could in the moment. I don't think that the first slam back was going to be perfect. I think they did it pretty damn well. I think the French is going to be a disaster. And then I think, but with hindsight and being able to look back, I think the Australian Open is going to be pretty close to perfect because of the fact that they will have seen how the U.S. did it. And then I think they will have seen how the French did it. And then they'll have been able to learn from it. All of that is to say it wasn't perfect, but I think it was pretty damn good.
I don't want to harp on this anymore. I can't, yeah. You know, it's tough to look at the situation as a whole. I think my biggest thing is just seeing lower ranked players, the difference between the lower and higher ranked players and the opportunities. And that's just really thrown me over the edge lately. And
sure.
And to say from the ATP's point of view, to say, hey, if we have tennis, we have tennis. And I'm like, you're putting people in a really tough position, you know?
Yeah, let me just say that that's a different story.
Different story. And going back to the Open, yeah, did they work their asses off and far harder than the French have worked? 100%. I mean, we've started to get emails from the French now, weeks before. I know the U.S. Open was working their ass off. Do I think they made the right decisions when push comes to shove? No, I think they did a really poor job. But, you know, we're here, we're past it. I don't even want to harp on it anymore because, again, there's too much to worry about when I see players that are 300 in the world that are not going to be playing tennis for the rest of the year. It's tough. It doesn't resonate with the people at the top of the sport as much as I would like it to. And for them to say it's okay, I disagree with, you know, and not everybody, you know, I know I'm negative at times, but
I don't think anybody's saying that it's okay though. I don't think that's the right way to phrase it.
But if you're having the events, then the push comes to shove, it's okay. That's it. You can't.
I disagree with you.
Our intentions are not enough anymore. I think we've learned that through this pandemic.
Listen, okay. You know you and I are on the same page, right, in terms of that we're not providing enough opportunity.
Right.
We are on the same page with that. I do think in this situation, you have to work from the top down. I do understand that mentality of you have to get the biggest stuff going because that's what drives all of the money. Right or wrong, you have to get the slams going, you have to get the ATP and WTA events going, and then slowly but surely building down from there. Now, you and I both, I think, then agree that we should have had a plan for this at some point over the last 3 months.
that's, you know, maybe I'm, my issue is why the ATP doesn't look at it and like, holy shit, like tennis, we have our issues. Like, how is this not for them putting a magnifying glass and say, hey, if this is how we have to run when we have speed bumps, we should definitely be fixing some of these situations. Again, it seems like they're just super reactive. Like, oh, we'll just try to make it through. This won't be the last hiccup we have. This won't be the last issue we have. So when I'm seeing it and they're just like, oh, well, like you just said, we have to funnel it. I don't mind as much the process. I just mind people looking at it and say, this is okay for the future. You know, this is how, and that's kind of where, you know, I'm seeing it. And you know, we have some plans in the mix for some big announcements coming up soon that I've been working on and you know a little bit about. And I love tennis so much. I mean, I've been playing, I've been practicing. I've actually given a few lessons to some kids, which I haven't done worked with kids in a while. And they love it so much. You know, they love being out there, the parents. It brings around so much joy from all ages. And we're just missing that beat a little bit lately. I think we're just missing, what do the fans want? What do the sponsors want? How do they want to be a part of this? How do they see being a part of this? And how can we make it more inclusive and for the player themselves, you know? And that's kind of where I'm at, and that's where I'm trying to build too.
So my perspective over the last week, I've been doing almost entirely late matches.
Past your bedtime. The last
match of the day, every day, and I didn't get the call for the weekend, the finals, which I'm totally fine with. It's allowed me to have some time to watch and go out, and not go out to the tennis. I mean, not go out here because I'm not going
partying.
I just can't. What has struck me, Noah, is all of the people who are working at the events, whether it be ball kids, whether it be the people who are doing the catering and the food. Yesterday, they all got a chance to sit in the lower bowl of Arthur Ashe to watch the women's final. And the, you know, the loge level. I mean, I don't get me wrong. It's maybe, you know, a couple, 200-300 people. And to see the excitement on their faces at being able to see something of that magnitude was joyous. Truly joyous. To that point that, you know, we're the suites. Like, the players love the damn suites to be able to kind of hang out and watch and just go about their business. I know that was something for you that you enjoy, that you were kind of able to walk around and watch and hang out and see people and do your thing unfettered, right?
Freedom was the word. I think tennis has made it super difficult to enjoy the sport you want to enjoy. And I think I think that's been the major issue. Tennis, again, not only brings around some of the most affluential people, companies, brands, whatever, it also brings around extraordinary fans and people from all demographics. You know, I disagree. I mean, yes, is it a wealthy white people sport? Like, people, you know, there are points that it is, but there are a lot of times where it brings around so many different demographics. And again, I just don't think we make it efficient enough, easy enough for these people to be a part of the sport the way they want to be a part of it. There are so many rules and restrictions for every section, from players to fans to brands. And I think that has to be changed. I mean, you know, obviously COVID, for better or for worse, has given people almost a new light to look at things in all aspects of life, you know, giving them a new opportunity. And this is one of them. I mean, you know, they would have never had this chance. You know, the magician, you know, who was unbelievably amazing, you know, doing tricks in the dining hall. He was watching the match right there and having a great time. And I think we need to bring just that childlike spirit and enthusiasm back to the sport a little bit. And I think we got a little bit too stuck up in all aspects.
So you think that, let's just focus on the ATP side, not the WTA side, with no disrespect. You think that they have learned nothing? You think that they're just stuck? What are you saying here? Because I think you and I both know that there's going to be some major developments coming within the ATP here. likely as a response to the PTPA in some way, shape, or form. So I'm at a point where I am going to kind of wait and see right now, because I do anticipate ATP going to do something here because the PTPA is coming for them.
Yes. They, again, the word I use is reactive. I think it's a little bit too reactive. I do think something will be coming. So the two issues I have is reaction, and also I think it's just too small, a little bit lack of vision. That's kind of where my issues stem, where, you know, we've seen in the past, they're like, whoa, guys, watch out. Something big is coming. And then whatever it is, let's say it's the ITF or the new challengers, and we're just like, this is it. This was your grand plan that obviously didn't even pan out. So those are where my issues lie. It's like, if you're going to do something, do it. We can change. You're going to get backlash no matter what you do. So might as well do something that you could actually see can help benefit, you know, tennis and the people surrounding it, because all the improvements, quote unquote, that they've made are just far too small for my liking. We need something drastic. We need something, and bringing people from outside the tennis world to say, hey guys, these are the issues. I don't know anything about tennis, but I see these issues that you are dealing with. This is what we have to do to change them. And they're like, and I know that they push back against true reform. But that's what we need in a time like this, because, you know, we're seeing it right now. You know, I don't think any other sport has as many little, you know, we're missing those intangibles, I think, to a certain extent. We're missing the moving parts. We're missing all the little ins and outs, and it snowballs into a larger problem. And again, we have such a unique group of people that surround tennis, and I don't think we capitalize on it.
Yeah, I think one, again, I'm going to just disagree with you just a little bit in that I think this is the most we've disagreed on a podcast possibly ever. I don't know that we're at a point. I think you and I have same visions in terms of
the end goal. We end up
goals are very
similar. Yeah, yes,
are very similar. I don't think you can blow things up.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I think, and maybe that's just because I'm 72 years of age and I've just,
you look great.
Thanks. For 72, I think I do look good. But I don't think you can blow things up. I think you have to have, I would agree with you. This small incremental change is not nearly enough. You need to make bigger steps. But I think the idea of blowing the whole thing up, when we had 6 months that we could have and we didn't, now we're okay. Yeah, we fucked that up. We fucked it up. We could have done some major things in those 6 months. We didn't. Okay. Now what? Okay. So now we have to figure out what we're doing here from here on out. And we can't just like, and start over, but we're going to have to take some bigger steps. We're going to have to think, okay, what's the PTPA want? How do we make sure players are more engaged, more involved? All of those aspects, I completely agree with you that we need to get to a different end goal. But yeah, I think we're going to have to take some. It's going to take time.
Yeah, and it does. And the thing is, I usually, whether the answer is right or wrong, I usually have an answer for these things, or a made up answer, or something that can help it. While looking at the situation with the moving parts, and we say this all the time, with the moving parts that are in tennis, the entities within it that have so much power, I don't know how they do anything. You know, why I don't, you know, I blame people here and there, but I can blame everybody together, because you have seven different places around the world that have to come together and agree on something for anything to pass.
Right, right.
How does that work?
And that's
work?
Not even including the players.
Right, and that doesn't even include the players. So I'm just like, that's why I don't envy their position. I don't have an answer. And that's why the things that I'm doing are from the outside. You know, the announcement I'm going to make soon is all from the outside, because when I look in, and I've tried in certain areas, you can't. You have to climb this ladder that ends at a certain point, because you miss a ring and you're like, wait, I can't get there. How can I even possibly get these seven people in a room, then talk to the players and agree on everything, and then we push something forward? That's why nothing gets done.
It has to be one or two entities. I don't know the right answer about how the ATP and WTA necessarily come together. Mm-hmm. I don't because I don't believe in equality for men and women.
Just logistics
on the tour.
It's wise.
I'm not sure how that aspect comes together. Although I'd love it if we could find that way. But if we have one tour or two tours, it has to be just unified. Get rid of the ITF, kind of, you know, absorb the four slams into it. That's the only way that I think it's going to make any sense to me whatsoever in terms of us making exponential leaps in terms of finding ways to guarantee more money for players, expand the media horizons for emerging tennis markets, and I include the U.S. as an emerging tennis market because we are not doing nearly enough. I don't know. I wanted to talk. Can we change the subject just a little bit? When you're, go ahead, say your piece, and then we'll turn to.
Oh, nothing. We just have to turn our selfishness into a vision that if we come together, there's a larger pot at the end of this for all of us. That's really it. Keep going.
I wanted to talk about Naomi Osaka.
Did you?
I've been thinking about it honestly, and this is going to seem like a stretch to a lot of people, and but just the idea, and I saw it kind of floating around on Twitter yesterday, and I am in awe of this young woman in terms of the way she handled her desire to speak about racial injustice. I am in awe of the way she answered the question Tom Rinaldi posed to her yesterday of what does this mean to you? And she said, no, what does it mean to you? And that was one of those moments where I was just blown away by, it's not about, this is how I'm raising awareness. What are you doing? I was just taken aback by that. And then I saw a lot of discussion on tennis Twitter about, and including from people within the Naomi camp, the idea your message gets diminished unless you win. And I thought about that with regards to you. When everything happened with Novak, Noah, with all of that, I remember seeing those messages, awful messages of people saying, who is this guy? He's never won anything. And I find myself saying, how is someone like Noah or anyone like you who has something that they need to get out, whether it be a message of racial injustice, whether it be a message of equality, gender equality, whether it be a message of furthering economic opportunities for players at lower levels, whatever it may be, and I don't want to equate those, right? But how do you do it if you don't win?
Nobody expected for my name to be something at 200 in the world. The Djokovic situation was a cherry on top to what I've dealt with for the past year and a half since Behind the Racket started, was this idea that I thought I was working really hard to help players, and I was still getting messages when I lost saying, seems like you're putting too much effort into everything else. You should probably just quit both. Or, you know, why should we support something that you can't even, you know, I'm sorry. Why should we support something that the person running it, you know, can't even win a match in tennis? Why should we support somebody in tennis? And regardless of the rationale behind the comments, it hits you and you're like, wait, here I am thinking I'm doing something for the greater good, and people are attacking me for something so far away from that, in my head, so far away. I understand how you can connect it, but, and that's when I found out that you have to take it with a grain of salt and say, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm doing this because there is a lack of education. For whatever reason, maybe it's a lost cause that, you know, that person that told me to die after my match and the hate mail that I got, maybe that's a lost cause, but I'm doing this because I want to reach those people. I want those people, maybe 10% of the gamblers out there, read these stories and say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm going to cool it a little bit on these messages. I get it. I lost money, but maybe I'm going to cool it. you know, Naomi looks at the situation and, you know, obviously she's taken a major role and she's leaps and bounds above me in terms of public persona and everything, but she's
visibility.
And visibility. She's taken this step and we've seen it during the pandemic and her finding her voice and everything like that. She's taken this step and she said, I understand things are going to come my way, but if I say something that I truly, truly believe in with immense thought behind it, I'm going to say it. The repercussions are worth it for me to be able to sleep at night. And that's what it was for me. It was this idea that I felt this responsibility because I had the chutzpah. Yeah, that's a Yiddish word right there.
Thank you.
I had the guts to share my piece. I had the guts and the opportunity to share my piece on a very small platform. And I could not sleep at night if I didn't do that because I knew there were people, you know, it's at a very different level. Again, you know, I'm not at the forefront of race inequality. I try to do my part. But, you know, people that I believe don't have a voice in one way or another, and I can help in one way or another, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I didn't do it. And it's a tough situation. And the right people are the ones that can handle the hate mail and keep pushing forward. And it's been tough. And it's, you know, added to some of the mental health stressors that I've dealt with over the past year and a half. But there have been incredible moments where, you know, I had people come up to me and say, you know, Behind the Racket has saved my life. You know, I've read a story and it changed my perspective and I'm on a different journey now. And, you know, that one story is worth the 500 messages I got from fanatics telling me I should go kill myself.
And that's what's interesting to me is that I'm trying not to equate the two things, but I know, having talked to you a lot, what you have gone through, I can't imagine what Osaka's dealing with on a daily basis in terms. And again, I'm guessing she doesn't read nearly as much because she's getting thousands and thousands of messages of telling her to shut up and play, and messages of racially tinged, hateful messages that I can't fathom. And for her to continue to step forward and saying, this is what I believe in. I'm going to go on the biggest stage in our sport as the highest paid female athlete in the world. And this is what I'm saying. You need to pay attention to what's happening in the United States of America. I can't fathom it. So I think it's just been kind of sitting with me that if this person who has this much power in our sport, who has this much, I don't know, she is essentially at the pinnacle of our sport, pinnacle of sport itself. Mm-hmm. And she has to go through hell to be able to express her opinion. Why would anybody step forward and do anything? Well, and I can't.
But that's why
I can't.
That's why change doesn't come as easily as we want to. It takes a person that can withstand the hate and turn it into self-confidence. Turn it into, hey, this is why I'm doing it. This is why I'm stepping up every day. And you telling me that I shouldn't, and for all those reasons, somehow it's equating to me believing even further that this is the right thing that I'm doing. And it takes, and then, you know, you have to have different levels of that. I mean, I had to go through and have the different levels of people that supported me, you know, that were closet supporters because I was hating on the ATP, and then they were seeing, and it takes all these different paths. But, you know, for her to stand up on that stage, like you said, the pinnacle of sport, and do what she did, it shows that she's not willing to back down, and that shows who she is as a competitor. I mean, you can translate it to on the court, and she could take this on, and you need somebody like that to actually enforce change, because, you know, we've seen it in history. We've seen, you know, the Jackie Robinsons of the sport coming out and mm-hmm. getting absolutely obliterated by fans and the worst things coming at them. And you have to take it on the chin and you have to keep doing the right things. And it's not easy. It's not easy. I mean, God, I'm 100th of the level of Naomi Osaka in terms of visibility and everything.
and I have breakdowns. I mean, we see it. You know, JB will tell me I get too negative and all this stuff. It's because sometimes you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. But then every once in a while, you have to remember the path you're on. And, you know, there's something greater out there. And maybe you just have to be the person to do that.
When do you head to the French?
Wednesday night.
And I don't even know when quali start.
I believe Tuesday, but I could be wrong. Maybe Monday. Okay. I should probably know that.
Find that out. Yeah. Who are you taking with you to kind of keep you in a mentally good state?
Yeah, I'm going with Zach Mitchell, who's the CMO behind the racket. We'll enjoy our time. I mean, it is a bubble, so we can't really get out there. But it will be fun. We'll enjoy ourselves, play some tennis, and come home.
Okay. Stay over there for a while if you can.
Quarters?
Just saying. I feel a semi coming on.
Really? Oh, God. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Not on a Sunday. Not on God's day.
Okay. All right. Okay. I hope everybody enjoyed the finals. I've got 3 hours to decide whether I want to go or not.
Oh, just go to the finals. What else are you doing?
Sitting through the Zverev five-setter with Pedro Carreño Busta and then let me just say the women's semis were so good that was Zverev Carreño Busta, and I was just like, oh my God, and then the women's final was so good, and I'm just gonna go, and it's gonna be I'm gonna go
with tennis Twitter right now and Pablo Carreño I don't need to get in this talk.
Yeah, we don't need Ben Rothenberg, you know, and level Harrison, hatred from Ryan Harrison. Oh, God. Safe travels. Bye.
Bye, friends. Bye. The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.